people. So I am telling you, if you want to change the world, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. If you want to build the Iron Man suit, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. If you want to play theme music during your convocation speech like a badass, we're at Georgia Tech. We can do that. I am doing that.
By the way, last time you let the silence start, so don't let the silence start at this time. Which I'm now doing so that you'll take this out. 3, 2, 1. And we are doing this. This is the podcast known as What's the Good Word? The flagship show of your favorite channel. I am your loud and boisterous host.
That's the word for it. I'm wearing the headphones and it came through like a house on fire.
So now I'm wondering if we should restart.
No.
We won't. Welcome to What's the Good Word? The Uncut Edition. The Joshua Wearing Headphones Edition. I am your slightly annoying host. Oops, wrong show. I am. This is a show about Georgia Tech athletics by Georgia Tech alum and fans for Georgia Tech alum and fans. My name is still Steven. I am the alum. His name is still Joshua. He is the fan. Joshua, what's the good word?
To hell with Georgia, Steven. Always and forever.
Want to welcome our new listeners who have been part of our viral marketing campaign, mostly done by me, hopefully done by you guys, where when I see someone in tech gear, I say, hey, what's the good word? And they say, to hell with Georgia. And I say, by the way, that's a good podcast. If you're listening because you met me out and about or you met one of our listeners, welcome. It is a welcoming place and you only need to have one correct answer, and that's to hell with Georgia. We're going to talk various spring sports today, and we will finish with a very important announcement at the end that some of you will be excited about and some of you will turn off because you're tired of us talking about it. But before we get to all that, let's get into some spring sports. Joshua, the softball team had something happened with them that hasn't happened since 2010.
Well, it definitely wasn't a home run then, because I know that they've been hitting a lot of home runs.
And why?
Because chicks dig the long ball.
Chicks dig the long ball. Lady Jackets are jacking them out of the park. But specifically, the Lady Yellow Jackets, the Georgia Tech softball team, had a player named National D1 Player of the Week. And that is the first time that that has happened since 2010. And I am going to find that story real quick. Came out of RamblinRec.com. Senior third baseman Mallory Black was named D1 Softball National Player of this Week because guess what she hit?
I guess a home run.
She hit 5 home runs in the week because chicks dig the long ball. She drove in, she had 11 RBIs over 4 games.
Five homers.
That is a... You're seeing the ball well.
Yeah, I'd say so. It looks like a beach ball up there.
She, of course, won ACC Player of the Week honors. She went 9-for-18 for the week. She also scored 7 runs. That effort now places her at the top of the Power 5 with 16 home runs for the year and third in the nation with 52 RBIs. So, as I said, first time since 2010, Georgia Tech Hall of Famer Jen Yee in 2010 was named National Player of the Week, and she also was an All-American that year. So, like I said, fantastic week for Mallory Black. Speaking of the team, because it is a team sport, the Lady Jackets now sit at 25-16 overall, 9-6 in the conference. Over this last week, they had a... because they had been scuffling just a little bit. And over the weekend, they did take 1-of-2 from the Tar Heels. They lost 9-3.
That was a while ago, Dad. That's
sorry.
You did this last show.
Sorry. Dadgummit.
Can't take you anywhere.
Yeah, okay. So the most important thing is, over the weekend, they beat Auburn 10-9. Dadgummit. They did lose to Louisiana Tech 13-10, and they had lost to Auburn 4-3. But they beat Troy last Wednesday 14-9. So They're 2-2 over their last week. They have a chance this week. They're playing Alabama State during the week, and then they're playing at home against Louisville. So shout out to the Lady Yellow Jackets. By the way, let me just give you just my favorite as I just kind of keep track of them over the season. For the year, they do stand at 72 home runs as a team.
In 41 games?
In 41 games, which their opponents have 45 home runs. So they are now outpacing their opponents' home runs by 27. They have scored they have scored over 1,000 at-bats. They have 279 runs scored to 260.
That sounds a lot more realistic than 1,000 runs.
Can't take you anywhere.
Nope. So, well, I just can't read columns. My spatial awareness is nil.
The team is hitting .325 and slugging .583. So, well done, Lady Jackets. Keep up the great work, and hopefully you have a winning week this week.
Yes. Well, hey, the men's team had a winning week for the first time in a bit. They had a weekend series against Pittsburgh over up in Pittsburgh, PA, the hometown of Kurt Angle. And to open the series, they took a 6-3 win. Now, we're going to preface this because apparently when I did this last time, Steven did not like it. Pittsburgh is not exactly the greatest program. Coming in, I believe they're about 12-14 with only two wins in the ACC. So they aren't exactly the cream de la crop, if you will. But Georgia Tech took care of business the way that you hope they would. In the first game, they got a solid start from Aiden Finitari, who has been the rock for the starting rotation all year. Did give up 7 hits and 3 runs, but it was over 5 2/3 innings, limited the damage. And the bullpen duo of Ben King and Dawson Brown held the Panthers scoreless for their inning or 3 1/3 innings of work. Offensively, we got the 15th home run of the season from Drew Burris, as well as a home run from Matthew Ellis, which was just one of many hits in his 4-for-5 day from the catcher. You also had a 2-for-4 day at the top of the rotation from Trey Younger, and a 2-for-3 day from Drew Burris that included 2 walks and 2 RBIs. Other than that, most of the hits, I mean, the guys that I just mentioned, that is 8 hits. Tech had 9 total, so it was 3 gentlemen doing most of the damage here. The next game on Saturday, Georgia Tech did unfortunately lose 3-2. It was a walk-off for Pittsburgh, 2-2 in the 9th inning. Ben King gave it up. You know, not ideal. Not ideal in the slightest. Not something that you necessarily want to see happen. But there was a spectacular play. Trey Younger had a robbery of an outfield hit, robbed a home run. And there was also a diving play from Parker Brocious. So the defense was working overtime to keep them in this game. But a ground rule double in the 9th inning made it into a 3-2 loss for the Yellow Jackets. And then finally on Sunday, it was 7-4 win for the Yellow Jackets to finish it off. Took them to 5-7 in the ACC, 19-11 overall. 4-for-5 day from Trey Younger at the top of the lineup. Really had a great weekend out. Maybe he likes the cold weather. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. But Carson Kearse 0-for-4. Sorry, just really wanted to. He has cooled off just a little bit after his torrid start to his introduction into the starting lineup. But double from Trey Younger, double from Cam Jones, homer from Trey Younger, homer from Matthew Ellis, homer from John Giesler. Matthew Ellis does also have 7 home runs on the year. Strong start from Tate McKee. That is the big notable one from this game. 5 innings, 9 strikeouts, only 1 hit, only 1 earned run, 3 walks. And the Jackets, they are over 500, but they have been disappointing in the ACC. We're recording this on Wednesday, so by the time this episode is posted and you're listening to it, the results for the Georgia Southern game today will be out, so go check that out. We'll probably talk about it on next week's show. They have a weekend series against Virginia Tech in Atlanta. That will be the next one to pay attention to, followed by a midweek game against Auburn. The Jackets are they're continuing along.
Yeah.
Can't say that they're great. Can't say that they're awful. They are comfortably average.
Listen, the spring sports, both teams are showing some promise. Certainly not dominating, but both softball and baseball have shown some promise, shown some good things, and we'll see how they finish up the season. Two other teams in the spring that are doing fantastically well. We've kept up with the golf. We'll talk about them another time. But both the men's and women's teams have kind of hit a hot streak. And they're both ranked as teams now. Let's start with the men.
Ew.
They have climbed up into the top 30. They are now ranked as a team number 29. They're coming off two straight victories. They beat Louisville, and they also defeated Notre Dame over the weekend. They now stand 16-6 overall as a team, 6-4 in the ACC. Please apologize for Joshua yawning in the middle of my update. But
I don't think it was that loud. Goodness.
So
not
Tech,
like you.
In the Notre Dame, Tech had lost, had started with a loss in doubles play, but then they won four straight singles victories to earn the 4-3 team win. The first two wins in singles play came from Marcus McDaniel and Andre Martin. They took down their opponents in two straight sets. In fact, McDaniel finished 6-1, 6-4, and Martin finished 6-3, 7-5. Keshav Chopra came out victorious over Notre Dame, or some guy from Notre Dame, and 7-5, 7-6, very close singles match.
Skin to the teeth.
And Krish Arora clinched the match for the Jackets. He won 7-5, 3-6, 6-3, 7-5, 7-6. So the Tech was tied with Notre Dame at that time, 3-3. Before Arora won his singles match. So well done, Jackets men's tennis team. And the women's tennis team is now ranked number 22. Or actually, they were number 22 after beating Clemson 4-0, four straight wins on Friday afternoon. I believe they currently stand, as of this recording, at 20. So men's team and women's team both in the top 30. Women's team maybe as high as 20. And the defeat of Clemson was a scrubbing, as it were. They won the first doubles match. Let's see. So Alejandro Cruz and Given Roach won.
My personal favorite.
They won a 6-love victory. And then Kylie Bilchev and Scarlett Nicholson won their doubles match as well. And they won a 6-2 victory. Then in singles, there were three straight set singles victories clinched the match 4-0. So Sharapova rolling to 6-1, 6-3 victory. And then it was Nicholson put the Yellow Jackets up 3-0, dropping only four games against Jenna Thompson. And then it was funny, Tech won, sealed the win with a double fault from Clemson in the second set as Lee won a 6-0, 7-5 decision. So just,
double fault is crazy.
Just really kind of destroyed Clemson. The rest of the matches did not finish because there was no need to, because Tech won 4-0 and blanked Clemson. So shout out to both the men's and women's tennis team. They are on a great roll. The women's team is stand at 12-7 overall, 8-3 in the conference. I believe their next match is going to be I believe.
Nope, scroll back up. Yep,
yeah, so they've got two final matches this weekend against NC State and against Wake Forest, both at home. So Friday at 4 o'clock, Sunday at noon. If you want to go see some good tennis action, the women's team is playing. And then the following week, starting the 17th, the women's tennis team will be in the ACC championships and might have a chance to make some noise. The men's team is going to be welcoming Virginia Tech to the Ken Byers Tennis Complex this weekend. So that should be a good match. And I want to see when they start ACC play. So they play, Thursday they do Virginia Tech, and then Saturday they do Virginia. So Thursday, Saturday for the men, Friday, Sunday for the women, all at home, all at the Ken Byers Tennis Complex, and then they both play in the ACC Championships in Cary, North Carolina, starting Wednesday the 17th.
Go Jackets, go. Well, I've got some tidbits of information to drop about the basketball team, and then we're going to talk about football, correct, Steve?
Yes.
All right. So there's some transfer portal news. It's not exactly great news, but there's some kernels out there of decent news. So Georgia Tech has lost two other players from this year's team that have entered the transfer portal. One is Tyjon Claude, which me and Steven both had a conversation about where we were like, does he really still have eligibility? I thought he was a senior, and he is a senior, but COVID something, I don't know. He is confirmed as entering the transfer portal according to some articles. He's not listed on 24/7, but there was an article, I believe, in Rivals.com that said he is entering the transfer portal. So, Tajon, we wish you nothing but luck. Good luck wherever you end up, probably going back down towards the level he was at the previous year, where he was like player of the year or whatever. Mm-hmm. The other one that has entered the transfer portal is a bit of an unfortunate one, and it is fan favorite, favorite of the show, Debo Coleman. Debo Coleman entering the transfer portal. He will be a senior next year. I believe he only has one more year of eligibility, but at this point, I don't even know because we're still recovering from the COVID year stuff. I believe the COVID year is becoming a thing of the past.
Yeah, so DeWanna and Tyshawn Clott, I don't think anybody thought they were going to stay. I think most everybody thought they were graduating and moving on. But if they're allowed one more year of eligibility and they have it and they've got a COVID year, why would you not? You know, yeah. So that's not a problem.
So Debo came in 2021. Yep. So I assume he only has one more year, save for like a medical redshirt if he gets hurt. But Debo, it's one of those things that he was a consummate professional this year. He accepted a bench role, didn't complain. Damon went out of his way multiple times to be like, listen, man, Debo had every right really to not really enjoy what we were asking him to do, and he embraced it with a verve and was fantastic to work with. But there's also a chance for him to go down to another school and potentially play a bigger role. So it makes a ton of sense, and we wish him nothing but the best. If Josh Pastner happens to get a job, I'm sure that Debo will be not far behind.
I mean Debo was Josh's last big commit. Debo had committed to him very, very early, knowing him in Memphis and going to his basketball camps. And Debo's a lot stronger than people give him credit for. Debo was a very consistent player. He did a lot of little things. He was never as, you know, amazing offensively or anything that you would expect. But Debo was one of those players that you never said, man, what was Debo thinking right there? He was always in the right place. He always was doing the right things. He was guarding, you know, he was usually guarding people bigger, taller than him. So I don't know where he's going to land, but I will be happy to track his results elsewhere. I wanted to take the moment, so Kyle is the only one apparently that's graduating, because apparently DeWanna and Tyshawn,
as far as we know, maybe he's got another year.
I don't know. So you are losing now at least four players who played what I would call somewhat minutes on the court off that team. Interestingly enough, you have in the 2024 class, we have four commits, right?
Yep.
So
plus the potential for a fifth.
Right. The potential for a fifth, as well as who knows what Damon will do in the transfer.
He's reaching out to some people.
You know, for those of you, I'm sorry, five players, because Mari Abram also entered the portal. So,
and Carter Murphy's graduating, because he's like a 60-year senior, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so there you go. So it's six players who are off the team. I mean, basically at this point, before the freshmen come in, you know, you've got Bai, you've got Marco San Miguel, who never really saw the court as a freshman. You've got Kawasi, you've got Miles, you've got Nathan. You've got Lance Terry supposedly coming back. We haven't heard anything else. Tafar Gapare, Emmer Nichols, and Sako. And Saware, right. So that's your team before you get the four new recruits and whoever he brings in the transfer portal. I don't know if this will be the last of the people who transfer out. I don't know if any of those freshmen who didn't play transfer out.
Some programs start offering Miles Kelly some cars.
Yeah.
Hard to turn that down.
It is what it is.
There is a rumor. There is a rumor that Tech might have somebody coming in from the portal. There was a crystal ball entered in on 24/7 Sports, which
I saw this, yeah.
The accuracy on those can be a little hit or miss, but the Georgia Tech guys tend to be very good. Georgia Tech could be picking up one of the better guys in the portal, for what it's worth, Sam Vecini, who writes over at The Athletic. He's the main scout basically for basketball. He does a lot of college stuff and NBA draft stuff. The guy is Javian McCollum, coming from Oklahoma by way of Siena College. Vecini has him in the top 20, I believe at number 17 currently, with everybody that is in the portal, that has ever been in the portal, because a lot of the guys above him have actually committed. So currently available, he might actually be top 15. So Javion McCollum is a 6'2", 6'3", 170-pound shooting guard, combo guard. He's a noted jump shooter. Over in Siena, he was pretty consistently above 36. He was 42% in his freshman year, 35% in his sophomore year. He was at 31% last year in Oklahoma. Some of that might have been, I think he was creating off the dribble a lot. Vecini notes in his scouting report that he shot 38% off the catch. So he might be a bit better as a, you know, combo guard. I would almost say he's a little similar to Amari Abram in terms of like frame and play style from everything I've read. He's incredibly fast with the ball. He did average 13 points this past year on top of 3.4 assists. But it was relatively inefficient on 40% shooting from the field. But 94% from the free throw line. So there's touch there. I think you just kind of got to put him in better situations. I would question playing him next to a guy like Nate George because they are both kind of smaller, but if Nate's more of the ball handler and Javion's more of the three-level play finisher, it might work there. If he is coming, because he's not committed, but there's right. A crystal ball.
And he did, like I said, he played this last year with Jalen Moore. So.
And he's going to be a senior. He's going to be a senior.
Supposedly.
He came in 2021, similar to Debo, so unless he gets hurt and has to take a medical redshirt, he has one more year of eligibility remaining.
All right. So, we have two four-stars coming in as freshmen. Here's this guy who arguably could be a switch for Debo, maybe. You know, maybe
he's not as big. He wouldn't be like a three. He'd be more of a two, I think, an undersized two, or like a bench spark plug one, maybe. I don't know, but he's there's some talent. There's plenty of talent there. There's plenty of talent.
All right, time to talk some football.
Yeah. Well, Georgia Tech picked up another recruit in the 2025 class. We're going to talk about that real fast. They picked up a quarterback. Ironically enough, it's very interesting how quickly Brent Key likes to get his quarterbacks committed. He got it done early in the 2024 class, and he's doing it again. This time, he picked up Grady Adamson. He's a 6'1", 205-pound quarterback out of Edmond, Oklahoma. He is apparently the number 11 ranked player in Oklahoma, according to 24/7 Sports, as well as being a top 45 quarterback in this class. According to the composite, he's 960th nationally. He had a pretty decent offer sheet: Boston College, BYU, a couple other Power 5 schools like Pittsburgh, Syracuse, and also some, you know, like Ivy League schools like Dartmouth and Yale were offering him. So an interesting kind of set of offers there. But he's put up some good numbers. He's taken his high school to the semifinals in back-to-back years in the Oklahoma Class 6A2-2 division playoffs, whatever. Back-to-back years, he's thrown for over 2,500 yards. His sophomore year in 2022, he threw for 33 touchdowns and 10 picks. This past year, 28 touchdowns, 4 picks. Also has added about a couple yards on the ground here and there. But he was also the offensive back of the year in the Central Oklahoma Athletic Conference in 2023. So he's pretty talented.
Yeah.
I'd say so. And so he's the quarterback of the 2025 class. We'll see if they pick up another one. We'll see if he stays, considering they Tech brought in two quarterbacks this past recruiting class. Right. But I mean, normally they try to get at least one quarterback every recruiting class. I've heard a lot of coaches say that, considering, you know, there's always the chance that one of them doesn't work out, one of them now transfers.
Right. You have two coming in this year, and you have two on campus who, you know.
Yeah, Haynes King is kind of entrenched.
And
Pyron is supposed to be
clearly his backup and potentially heir apparent, you know, after this next year. So
we shall see.
I think you wanted to also talk some scrimmage.
I was going
to
talk about the scrimmage stuff, yes.
Okay, and then I've got a couple of pieces to pass
on. Well, so Georgia Tech has done a couple scrimmages within practice in preparation for the white and gold game coming up this coming Saturday. So tune into that, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, let me stop you right there. So white and gold game, April 13th, this Saturday, 1 o'clock. The game is free. At Hyundai Field at Bobby Dodd Stadium, right?
Bobby Dodd Stadium at Hyundai Field.
Yeah, whatever. I reversed it.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. And by the way, because we've just laid it out, you know, baseball is baseball has a home game, softball has a home game. We've already mentioned tennis playing, so you could spend the whole day there. The white and gold game is free. So,
yahoo. Well, so one small thing before we talk about the scrimmages, Georgia Tech talking about crystal balls. Georgia Tech for football picked up a crystal ball for a big time recruit. If it would work on me here.
Offensive lineman Justin.
I'm trying to find the best way to pronounce his name. It's Justin Hassenhutl, I believe, is how you pronounce his name. But he is. There's a lot of consonants in there. Let me keep it that way. But he's
clearly Western European.
Well, whatever it is,
Scandinavian,
whatever he is, German. He is talented as can be. In the 24/7 composite, he is 105.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
It's a high number. It would be one of Tech's best recruits of all time, or at least of recent times. He is coming out of Rabun Gap Nakuchi School in Rabun Gap, Georgia.
And this is for 2025.
This is 2025, yes, sir. Yeah, 105 in the 24/7 rankings, 196 in the overall composite. Either way, he's a top 10 interior lineman. Top 30 in the state of Georgia. He's got offers from Penn State, North Carolina, Oklahoma, USC. He is truly Titus worldwide out here in the streets. So something to keep an eye on. Picking up a crystal ball for a kid that talented is, I'm not going to say unheard of, but it hasn't happened in a while. But anyway, onto the scrimmage notes. As we were talking about, they have had two scrimmages. The most recent one was this past Saturday. I'm just going to give you some names that was mentioned. First by Brent Key, did an interview after the game. The thing that stuck out to me talking about it is the O-line, despite returning four starters from this past year, it is not settled in the slightest. They gave not one, not two, but three freshmen runs with the starting unit in the scrimmages. So you had Jameson Riggs was playing left tackle with the ones. You also had Harrison Moore and Santana Alotupuloa playing interior line with the first unit for a series. So Jameson seems to have a little bit more leeway to potentially play up there. Looks like it's going to be he and Ethan McKinney for the left tackle spot. But the other two freshmen getting work in at guard, potentially replacing Scaglione, who left as a graduate. Talking about the secondary, he specifically mentioned DJ Moore, who is a converted receiver. Remember, he converted during bowl practices. Came out of Archer. He was a wide receiver, didn't play for his first 2 years on campus. They moved him to DB. He said apparently he had a good camp, and Clayton Powell-Lee has improved, which is impressive because Clayton Powell-Lee was already pretty good. So something to keep an eye on there. Anthony Carey, the freshman running back, the big-time freshman running back out of Florida, was mentioned as it looks like he might be the number two back potentially. He had some big-time runs with the team. Him and Trey Cooley are kind of neck and neck for that spot, but Jamal Haynes entrenched at number one. Zach Pyron got some run with the first unit, of course, because they're still trying to keep him in game shape. And then, unfortunately, Jackson Long, a transfer tight end from last season, tore his ACL. I believe he missed all of last season as well with an injury, or he just didn't play a ton. But he will be out, which is very unfortunate, very talented kid. I'm not going to bore you with too many other names, but the other big ones, Jackson Hawes, the tight end transfer from Yale, has kind of stepped up. It looks like he might be the starting tight end this year with Brett Scyther, considering everybody else left. Amari Harvey at cornerback has continued to make plays. Looks like he might be stepping in to replace Spider Sims. Omar Daniels transferred from Kansas State this past year also. Another one that caught my eye was Jacob Cruz. He was a linebacker out of Kennesaw. He came in. He was a very good athlete, had a lot of late helium in the 2023 recruiting class. He's been moved to rush linebacker, and it looks like he is playing well over there. He's a great athlete, so it makes sense. But he looks like he might get some playing time there, partially because there's just a ton of other coverage linebackers. To go along with Kyle Efford, Taj Butler and Georgia transfer E.J. Lightsey have impressed so far, as well as Tranilius Tatum has improved. So the defense is the one that has shined. The offense, we kind of know what we have. A lot of the guys from last year are coming back. Defense, there's a lot more questions. So that was kind of why they talked about them a lot more.
Just imagine, ladies and gentlemen, if you go down to the white and gold game this weekend, you too will have as many opinions and thoughts and analysis as our fan Joshua here. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Well done.
I hope I did not bore everyone to death out there.
The last football note I will make is, if you haven't seen it already, the schedule for next year has, or this year, 2024 fall season for football has been released. Let me just go through it very quickly. We do play on the very first weekend over in Ireland, Saturday, August 24th, against Florida State in Aviva Stadium in Dublin, Ireland. After that, we play a home game against Georgia State on the 31st. We play at Syracuse on September 7th. We play at home against VMI Key Dets. I like that, Key Dets. And then we play at Louisville on Saturday, September 21st. We have an off week on the 28th. Then in October, we play Duke at home. We play at North Carolina on the 12th. And we play at Mercedes-Benz on October 19th against Notre Dame. So we play Florida State in Ireland. We play Notre Dame at Mercedes-Benz. Have a chance to maybe make that a home game if we can all get behind the team. The 26th of October, we play at Virginia Tech. And then very interesting, we have a week off on the 2nd. We play Miami at home on the 9th and a week off on the 16th. So the month of November is going to be very interesting with 2 weeks off and one home game in between. And actually coming off that, then we play Thursday the 21st, which would be Thanksgiving, I believe, against NC State. So November is going to be a very interesting week. You're home the entire month. And I said interesting week. An interesting month of November. You're off 2 weeks, and you play two home games against Miami and NC State.
And then at the end of the month,
you play the Pups with the misspelled canine name on November 30th, and then the ACC championship.
Some scheduling changes due to conference realignment, you know, the ACC going to 9 conference games. The ACC expanding is part of it as well, considering they added 3 new teams this coming season. So that definitely plays into it. Unfortunately, I hate the fact that they have to take off half of November when they're going to be traveling to Ireland and then coming back and playing that next week. That's not going to be fun.
No, it won't be. But I do think that, well, they give them 3 weeks off. The problem is we don't get the first one.
That's what I'm saying. Is if we're going to, I would prefer to take one of those Novembers, put it right there in between like Florida State and Georgia State or Georgia State and Syracuse. The Georgia Tech football team is going to be traveling a lot.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting to watch, at least in preseason rankings. At this point, there are, I think, 5 ranked teams that we play. So we always have one of the harder schedules because we're the ones who play Georgia, and recently that's been, you know, Georgia's at the top of the list.
Top of the bill.
So, yeah. So anyway, that's it. There's one last thing we need to do this week, Joshua. And some of our loyal listeners, and by the way, if you're a loyal listener, thank you so much. And hopefully you're enjoying the expansion of the What's the Good Word channel, because while it will always be the What's the Good Word channel, because this revolves around my alumnus and his fandom of Georgia Tech athletics, we are also residents of Atlanta. We like to follow other Atlanta sports. Joshua does 3 other podcasts about the Hawks, the Falcons, and the Braves. I've yet to be invited on the Braves podcast, but as the season goes on, I'm sure you will hear my voice because baseball is my other love that was created by God. But there is one other piece of news we have to take care of, because it is the end of an era. It lasted 1,316 days. It was in the middle of happening when we started this podcast 2 years ago. And while it will change and come back better than ever, it does need to be acknowledged.
It does indeed.
That on Sunday night, April the 7th, in his 1,316th day, the reign of our tribal chief, of Georgia Tech former defensive lineman Joe Anoa'i, known to the world as Roman Reigns, our tribal chief, who has been acknowledged as the WWE Universal Heavyweight Champion of the World. His reign was ended. By who? A Georgia native.
Cody Rhodes.
A Marietta native, born and bred, son of Dusty Rhodes. Cody Rhodes did end that reign. And by the way, if you are not a professional wrestling fan, that match contained everything that can be wonderful about professional wrestling. because it was an athletic. They showed off athleticism. They did great storytelling. There was some goofy spots. There was some nice run-ins that didn't take too long. It was just a very entertaining match. And one of a friend of our show, Elijah, who is a bigger professional wrestling fan than you and I put together, was watching with us and got out of his seat and was going nuts. And so, Roman, we acknowledge you.
Put them up. Put the ones in the air.
Put the ones in the air. We will see you soon, I'm sure. You're going to take some well-deserved time off. And when you come back, we will still acknowledge you. Even though not as champion anymore, we acknowledge you as our tribal chief and our favorite Georgia Tech defensive lineman.
Absolutely.
Until next time, we ask the most important question of this show.
What's the good word?